Well, buckle up.
In the old time machine.
13th century.
Texture, taste.
Very fishy.
Preservatives. Cornish pastiche.
Oh my God, I've never eaten before.
The themes of empire, mission, inheritance, and destiny.
Hello and welcome back to What the Food, the podcast that uncovers the fascinating origins of dishes, food items, and drinks from all around the world. We dive headfirst into history to try and figure out why we eat the food that we eat. My name is Miles Dickinson, and as always, I'm here with Andy Cantor and Dom Gray. And today, we're going to explore the origin of Turkish delight.
What a delight.
It's delight.
It's got delight in the title.
Can you think of another food that's got delight in the title?
Angel Delight.
Angel
everybody's
Delight.
Everybody's favourite.
Yeah,
no, dessert. Nice little whippy moussey job. I like the strawberry one.
Oh, strawberry.
Yeah, I was a Ben when I was eating it, you know. I was.
Yeah, that's controversial, that. Butterscotch is normally top of people's lists.
Oh, yeah. Delight. Yeah, I can't think of anything else.
Yeah. Bit of a wild name for it. Obviously, as we'll get to it, people from Turkey don't call it Turkish Delight. They just call it Delight.
A bit big-headed, wouldn't it?
just call it Delight.
Delight, yeah. Have a piece of Delight. As you said, Miles, today we're unwrapping the sugary, scented secrets of a treat that's travelled from the palaces of sultans to the shelves of our local sweet shops.
Mm-hmm.
Talking, of course, about the world-renowned Turkish delight.
Turkish.
Picture this. Turkish. Picture this, right? Strolling through the bustling bazaars of Istanbul, surrounded...
Is that a horse neighing? What, lad?
It's like a local singer.
Local singer?
No?
I thought it was a call to prayer.
No. Nah,
as that incredible local singer is busting his pipes, you're surrounded by a kaleidoscope of colours and a symphony of city sounds. Among the myriad of wonders, sweet aroma wafts through the air. Shit. No.
shit. Lots of shit.
It's a diarrhea epidemic.
Sweaty men.
Lovely stuff.
Lamb shawarma. That's a good smell, though. That's a good smell.
Yeah, that's a good smell, yeah. That smell leads you to a stall piled high with cubes of something soft, chewy, and irresistibly fragrant. It's Turkish delight, obviously. Come on.
It is always like displayed beautifully, isn't it?
It is.
Whenever I've seen it in the real world, it's lots of little cubes, all different kind of colours, all beautifully placed. It's
meticulously stacked, right?
The displays are always lovely.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. And I mean, today we'll be delving into the origins of this iconic confection, tracing its royal roots back to the Ottoman Empire.
Whoa.
Yeah, we'll discover how a simple mix of sugar, starch, and flavouring conquered the hearts of sultans and commoners alike. Before I get into it, though, fun little news article that I came across when doing the research for this podcast. I just want to read the headline for you guys. So this was from Friday the 14th of July, 2023 at 7:42 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
Billy Bird.
Pig rescued from ditch near Chichester. Encouraged out by Turkish delight snack.
Yay.
What
does it all?
Someone is cutting about at that time of the morning just with Turkish delight, ready
coaxing
to use to lure a pig. Yeah. God.
So I'll read you the description of this event. So a pig has been rescued from a ditch near Chichester, encouraged out by his favourite snack, Turkish Delight.
Favorite West snack. Sussex. So he's got a history of eating it.
It's got form for it. It's got form
for it. It's not like he's just been like, oh, smells sweet, I'll have a bit. He's like, oh, my favourite.
Yeah, expensive pig if you can only feed it with this like imported Turkish Delight.
Yeah, but imagine how good them the chops bacon, are. Yeah, that's where my mind went.
It's like candied bacon, but you don't need to put any sugar on.
Candied bacon, don't need to put any sugar on. Skips a step of the cooking process out by feeding
been
it.
Been doing that the all sugar his before. Life.
But yeah, West Sussex Fire and Rescue Services were called to Burdham Road near Chichester to rescue a large pig called Boris, who had been stuck there for 2 days. He's been stuck there for 2 days.
Oh, God.
Why didn't they get any Turkish delight any sooner?
I know. So the technical rescue unit used slings and lines to support Boris out, and then the team encouraged him to leave the ditch and return to his field using his favourite snack of Turkish delight to help. He was rescued with no injuries and was soon reunited with his owner.
Wow.
There you go.
The power of the sweet cubes.
That's it. So some people just get it as a little, you know, little summit on holiday on the way back, a little gift for someone. Nah. Saved a life.
Heroes.
Saved a life.
So yeah, anyway, I thought it was a nice little tidbit. Yeah, so grab yourself a cup of your favourite brew, maybe sneak a piece or two of the delightful treat. I know we've a little surprise for us later when we get to a section of the episode, but we'll be live tasting some Turkish delight.
First time on the pod.
Trying it live. And we'll see how that goes. See how you enjoy the dulcet tones of us chewing on something. That will be a nice sensory wonder for you guys.
Little ASMR break on the podcast.
Yep.
Went to Tesco before to grab this. And I mean, to be fair, I've got to just like rip the Band-Aid off here. Turkish Delight's a guilty pleasure of mine. I've been embarrassed about it for a while.
All right there, Boris.
And... I'm pretty sure like last episode started with a fat joke as well. And we're 2 minutes in and I'm being compared to a pig. That's fine. Don't worry. But yeah, Turkish Delight is I'm a fan. And
big fan.
Yeah. And I like the fries one. And we'll probably get to it later in the podcast and we'll talk about probably how it's a bit of an imitator of the real thing. I understand that, but it's a guilty pleasure of mine. I do eat it from time to time.
Fries specifically.
Well, yeah, because it's just easy to get your hands on, isn't it?
True.
You. One bar of it gives you 37% of your sugar for the day.
I have 3 bars and I'm only 10% over, you know?
A little bit of wiggle room, isn't it?
Yeah. Nice. But yeah, I'm a fan of Turkish Delight. The good, proper stuff and the cheap, nasty stuff. I'll have it however I can get it.
However you can get it. But if you had like, because you've been to Morocco, right?
Yeah, I've been to Turkey as well.
Oh, you've been to Turkey
Moroccan
as well?
Moroccan delight.
Yeah.
Well, no, but like, so you must have had the proper stuff in Turkey then.
Yeah.
And how did it stack up to your fries?
Well, it was very nice, but didn't have the chocolate round it, so I want nothing to do with it. Okay, I'm joking. No, it was way better. It was nice. I've had like some bad Turkish delight though in my time. I'm not claiming I'm like a Turkish delight professional, but
Turkish delight Dean.
Yeah, but I feel like I've had some shit ones. I feel like I've had some that are very fragranced. Yeah.
Fragrant. I've had ones that taste a bit like soap.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that'll be... So there's a variety of flavours out there. The ones that you've had that are soap flavoured are probably like rose flavoured.
That's exactly
maybe?
What I was about to say. Yeah. When I used to be a teacher, some kid went on holiday to Turkey, brought back a box and was like, here you go, you can have these. I was like, oh, that's brilliant. Ate one and I was like, it's not brilliant.
No.
All right, we'll share them with the class. Come on, we can all have a go.
Yeah.
What a nice teacher you've got that I'll all let you have a bit of this. One of them.
Yeah. Well, I've had rose-flavoured ones that I've liked before, but then I've had rose-flavoured ones that have been, like, soapy. Didn't know Airwick have got into the Turkish Delight game.
Airwick. In my opinion, you shouldn't be eating flowers at all, honestly.
Probably
not after anything flower-flavoured.
Yeah.
What about it.
No, I agree. You don't be needing that.
No, not at all. But I mean, so I was going to start by obviously doing the whole sensory experience for Turkish Delight. But I feel like yourself, Miles, might be a bit more qualified to actually give us a rundown of the taste, the texture of Turkish Delight.
I'll take the reins on this one.
So you're far away, Boris.
So you open up, open. You should call me Boris.
No, he defo said Miles. He said far away, Miles.
I said Miles. And when you're ready to come out of that ditch, we'll be if
I'll go get the crane.
Wow. Okay. I was looking forward to jumping in there and doing the description, but no, I don't feel like it.
Far away.
Excited for it. Like a pig in shit.
God. Right, okay, let me get into my mind frame, my little piggy mind.
Right, we'll start with taste. Come on, start with taste.
Well, I'm unboxing it. I'm unboxing a nice ornate box. I'm revealing the powder flourish that kind of rises up as you lift the top of the box. The sweet powdered sugar scents the air and the slight whiff of Antalya's rose fields permeate my nostrils.
Like I'm in a GCSE English lesson here. You've been asked to write a descriptive passage.
I lift one of the cubes up, take a sniff, but a clump of the sugar gets released and vaporizes and goes up my nostril and fucks me up. So I'm coughing, spluttering all over the place. I'm struggling to see straight. There's cloudy sugar in the air. I can't see anyone. I'm knocking things over, but eventually manage to settle. Get the Turkish Delight, put it in my mouth. Powdery to begin with, but then it's sweet. And then you chew and it's chewy and it's a fun texture.
It's a fun texture.
I always have a good laugh when I eat some.
Yeah, it's just a fun texture, you know? Something different. You don't normally have that texture. It's, you know, it's alien to my mouth.
It's a bit jelly-like, isn't it?
You're not really selling this experience at all. Like, first you open the box, you've like coughed your guts up, you've inhaled something, and now you've got an alien in your mouth.
Well, no, no, it's not an alien. It's just it's alien.
Right.
Anyway, right, it's a rose flavored one, so it's okay. I'm getting this rosy scent, and yeah, it's clinging to my teeth.
Oh, this, mate, are you trying to get people to eat this or not?
It's nice. It's just nice, alright. So yeah, right. So that's
so
it. Yeah,
Miles's description, sensory experience description of a Turkish delight is. It's nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, the end, bottom in the line. End.
Bottom line, it's good. If you get the good shit, it's good.
Right. There you go, people.
You weren't sold before, now you surely are.
Now you've got to be sold. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, as Mal said there, you've got like the rose water flavour, but you've got all sorts of other flavours as well. You know, you've got like lemon, pistachio, date flavour, all sorts. You can get all sorts. And you can also get like, within the Turkish delights themselves, you can get actual nuts in them. And a bit of
I've had
complexity.
That before, little rogue nut.
I think them rogue nuts, the feature of those rogue nuts is probably better, to be honest. It just
a bit of extra texture in there.
But yeah, on the texture side of things, obviously soft, yet chewy. Dusting of icing sugar or sometimes powdered coconut. Don't know if you've ever had.
Decimated coconut on there.
Decimated.
Leaves a little hint of luxury on your fingertips as you work your way through the box.
Hint of luxury every day.
I think the best thing or the most striking thing about Turkish delight is its like visual appeal. Like it looks very...
It's a pop of colour, like, isn't it?
Ornate. Mm. It's a feast for the eyes. It is.
I think anything that's got kind of like a sugar, powdered sugar on it, kind of just feels a little bit elevated. You know, you usually do that to kind of finish things off and give it a bit of a nice presentation. And with that being just kind of like a default way of making Turkish delight, it kind of always has that nice finish to it.
Yeah.
Looks good.
And in Turkish culture as well, Turkish delight is much more than just like a sweet treat. It's like an expression of like hospitality, kind of a bridge between generations as well. So it kind of molds two kind of generations together. So there's one thing that they can agree on. It's a Turkish delight. They enjoy it. They like it.
Delightful.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever had a Turkish coffee.
I was going to say.
You had one of those?
I was going to say, like, one before, very sweet. They kind of have an affinity for sweet things, I think, Turkish people.
Yeah.
Sweet tea, so with coffee.
Yeah, exactly. So with that Turkish coffee, they'll also often serve like a little square of Turkish delight on your plate as well. Like like we'd normally, you know, like an Italian, maybe you'd get like a little chocolate or something on the side. Yeah. Or I don't know, in England, you get like an after eight fucking on the side.
Yeah.
Turkey, you get like a little...
Just a couple of cubes.
Little Turkish delights.
Yeah. They're not going crazy with it, are they? They're not having like whole boxes of it at a time. You know, they're just having a couple of squares. And it's quite a nice way to have it, isn't it? On the side of something in a smaller portion.
I think so. Yeah, because you don't need a lot of it, really.
No. No, it's a bit sickly, you know.
I mean, I do. I'll have as much as I can, but any normal person.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think most people, hopefully, that are listening will have had Turkish delight before, or at least come across it and gain an understanding of what it actually is. But yeah, let's get into the origin, shall we? Some interesting stuff here. So let's do it. Let's delve into the past. So Sultan Abdulhamid, interesting lad. He ruled the Ottoman Empire from 1774 till 1789. So not a long time, but decent amount of time. Wasn't the greatest of leaders. He reluctantly led his Ottoman army into battle against Russia that nearly cost him his empire completely.
What nearly cost him the Ottoman Empire?
Nearly cost him his empire, the Ottoman Empire, yeah.
Ooh, so nearly lost against the Russians.
Yeah, exactly. Nearly got fucked over.
Is it the Ottomans that were like really good on the sea? They were like naval, weren't they? Was that their kind of like forte? The kind of...
I love the good cannon.
Was it a cannon?
Good cannon and a gun.
I always thought they had like a big naval fleet.
I think they did have some kind of naval presence, but I'm not sure if they were famous.
That was what
like,
they were known for.
You know,
yeah.
British.
Nothing, you know, like the Royal Navy.
Nothing like the Royal Navy. No. Exactly. No. Didn't have like the... I'm only getting this from Civ. Didn't have like the Jassiers or something? Was there not like a special...
They had the... Oh, God. Yeah, they got like the little hats and...
Silly hats on.
They travelled far, though, the Ottoman Empire, didn't they? They kind of... got themselves out there into the world and did a lot of conquering and and such.
I think the biggest size, so it reached its peak around 1520 to 1566. And the Ottoman Empire stretched from like, obviously, like Turkey and a lot of the Balkan state as well. So like Serbia and places like that were under the Ottoman Empire. Not directly, they weren't like full of Ottomans. They were like under Ottoman rule because it conquered that far.
Vienna, didn't they? Stopped at Vienna maybe?
Yeah, they did.
Well, we covered that in the Strudel episode. Yeah, was it not?
Incorrect. It was Croissant episode.
I forgot.
It was croissant.
It was croissant.
It was the croissant. Yeah, it was. It was because they kind of dropped off the little flaky pastry recipe.
Yeah, and also the shape of a croissant mimics the flag of the Ottoman Empire.
That's it. The crescent moon.
Crescent.
If you haven't checked out that episode, it's a corker. I obviously think it's so good I could remember it entirely.
Yeah, I also had a great time. So yeah, not a great sultan, Abdul Hamid, but he did know a thing or two about women. So if legend is to be believed, the 27th Sultan's understanding of the needs of his female companions left the world an altogether more congenial legacy. So you see, he faced a bit of a sticky problem on how to keep his four wives and hundreds of mistresses sweet. It's a lot of moving parts there, a lot of spinning plates. And he is thought to have come up with a rather soft and chewy idea. He summoned the greatest confectioners in the empire to his court. He ordered them to find a desert, fuck me.
Go and find a dry land for me.
The drier the better.
The drier the better, the more sun the better. I want to deal with my wives and mistresses.
Leave them in the desert.
Yeah. I want to go sand dune sliding.
I obviously meant to say dessert, obviously. Mm. So he summoned the greatest confectioners of his empire to his court. And he ordered them to find a dessert that would quell the rumblings of discontent within his harem. Mm.
Okay.
Imagine getting this call. Imagine you just there making your little sour Skittles, Dom. And fucking, you just get a call. You get a little telegram. Little wouldn't be a telegram, would it? It would be like a horse messenger. And he's like... Dom, you've been summoned. Sultan Abdul Hamid needs you to come to his court. His wives aren't happy, and you're going to be tasked with making a dessert that's going to make him happy.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't be buzzing, would you? Because if you get it wrong, you're probably not coming home here.
No, exactly.
No.
And also, like, he knew a way to a woman's heart, even all the way back then, was just to give her some sweetie treaties.
Treaties.
You know, it's
some things just don't change.
Some things don't change. If Joanna's pissed off, you know, what do I do? Get some sweet.
Turkish delight. So in 1777, amidst the grandeur of the Ottoman Empire, a skilled confectioner named Bekir Efendi answered the call. A confectioner from the Anatolian mountain town of Kasatamonu, nailed that, journeyed from his small town, which was located in the eastern Anatolia region, to the bustling city of Istanbul, or Constantinople, as it was called back then.
Proper little adventure he set himself off on.
He did. The big city. He did, yeah. So during kind of that time, and when he kind of arrived in Istanbul, he set up a little modest kind of confectionery stall, which obviously, you know, he used to experiment and to make the, more to experiment on what the Sultan was after and what he could serve the Sultan. And it was apparently here that Bekir Efendi, according to popular belief, crafted the very first lokum, L-O-K-U-M, also known to us as Turkish Delight.
Wow. They still call it that today, don't they?
They do, yeah.
They don't call it Turkish Delight, do they?
No, I'd be mad if they did.
Would be a bit self-indulgent, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So the name lokum is derived from the Arabic al-lukum, meaning morsel or mouthful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, little bite-sized pieces.
Little bite-sized pieces, exactly. The original name of this treat was Rahat-ul-ulkum. Nailed it again. Which translates to throat comfort, a nod to kind of like the soothing texture and ingredients that you'd get from Turkish delight.
Would not have guessed that off of Miles's description of the texture of it.
Sliding aggressively down the gullet.
Aggressively down.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's not a crunchy thing to eat. You know, it's soft, it's spongy,
it's a throat comfort.
Nice for the throat, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So Becky's recipe was simple. He heated water, lemon and sugar, which he then added to a second pan containing flour, water and tartar, like cream of tartar, you know, a baking ingredient, not tartar sauce, cream of tartar. He then simmered that for like an hour. He then sprinkled on the rose water before allowing his mixture to cool and kind of like congeal into like a big mold. You then dusted it with your powdered sugar and then chopped it bite-sized chunks. Alchemy complete, Turkish delight or locum born.
Yeah. Okay, so what's the component that makes it squidgy? Is this just the flour or is this other ingredient that you mentioned?
So I think it's a combination of the flour and the tartar as well.
And a bit of a chemical reaction and making exactly. it a bit chewy.
Yeah. So cream of tartar is like, it's used to help like stabilize like whipped egg whites in meringues and kind of cake.
Oh, okay.
So I think it gives them that, you know, like meringues, like soft and kind of chewy on the inside.
Mm.
Like a good meringue. It gives it that kind of...
That kind of texture.
That's where it comes from.
Okay. That's interesting. And then the rose thing. So that is the default kind of flavour of Turkish delight, isn't it? Rose water.
It is.
Is that, I'm guessing, just that's because there's an abundance of roses to kind of harvest in Turkey, or is there another reason?
No, I think it was just popular at the time. I think maybe, yeah, there was rose water that was abundant in Turkey at the time, but I think it was also a popular flavour at the time. There was obviously like other candies and other sweets that were floating
rose
about.
Flavored.
Yeah, the area that were rose flavoured, exactly.
Right. Because it's not a very popular kind of like flavour profile today, is it?
I think it's a Western thing, the reason why it's not popular. I think the Eastern kind of side of things, I think it is quite a popular flavour and you get a lot more rose flavoured things in the East.
Yeah. A flavour profile that never really materialised in the West.
Exactly. It just never really caught on and was as popular. But yeah, I mean, locum was a hit. It became a daily staple at the feasts held at the Ottoman court. And obviously, thanks to his creation, Bekir's fortunes rose dramatically. He was granted the title of chief confectioner to the palace and established a bit of a bigger shop in 1778, I think.
Smashed it.
It thrived under his management and the management of his sons. And then it was handed down generation to generation. And the family today still maintains a small shop in Istanbul, close to the Yeni Kami, which is a new mosque. And it like remains a popular shop on like gastronomic tours around the Turkish capital.
Like, so it's got a direct like proof that it was the family that created the Turkish delight, and they've still got a shop.
Yeah.
That's mad.
Exactly.
Like the claim to fame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a few times on this podcast that we've had like it contested and we've had like multiple shops both claiming, you know, sometimes three or four different like families claiming that they were the ones creating whatever it was. So, you know, the fact that it's uncontested, you've got one and there's still a shop that you can go to. Mad.
Yeah. So it is uncontested by locals. There are, as we'll see in a minute, a historian who believes that maybe it wasn't or Bekir's creation, and he's got some thoughts on that, but we'll get to that. But yeah, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, in the local area, it's uncontested. But yeah, so here's Bekir's kind of Turkish delight recipe. It's won countless awards, both at home in Turkey and abroad in Europe. And yeah, I mean, like obviously testament to the fact that it's decent enough that the shop is still open to this day, despite opening in 1777, which is pretty mental.
Stood the test of time.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah.
Fun little fact about his very first shop, Bekir's very first shop. There is a watercolour painting by Amedeo Prezzolzi, who was a Maltese painter, not the chocolate, the place. he was known for his paintings of the Ottoman Empire and the Balkans in like the 18th and 19th century. And there's a painting of Bekir serving an Ottoman mother and two children at his workshop. This painting is currently on display in the Louvre.
Ooh,
wow.
Doing all right. Okay. Yeah, we'll get a picture on our Instagram of that so you can see what it looks like. But yeah, it's a nice, pretty, really cool painting, actually. It's like a very Ottoman-looking man serving some kids at a sweet shop.
Whenever we've spoken about the Ottomans in the past, they've always been like spoken about as like a group, you know, going around the world, you know, killing people, doing this, that, the other. And it's hard to kind of imagine them outside a sweet shop, giving people little sweeties, eating
little...
I think
they were quite a cultured folk as well.
Oh, massively.
As brutal. They, you know, smart guys. I've remembered, by the way, the name of their little special forces guys. It was the Janissaries.
Janissaries.
Just randomly came to me. Sorry. But
I was nearly right. I said Jassirs.
There you go. Almost. You had the right letter.
Yeah. But no, they were one of the biggest and longest lasting empires in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They had like religious and cultural diversity. Like they let people practice their own religions, their own cultures. They weren't like...
pretty progressive at the time then, isn't it?
Letting people do that. Exactly.
Okay. So they're not the cold-hearted brutes I'm imagining. They're a cultured folk.
Yeah.
I need to read more about the Ottomans, I think. I feel like there's a big gap in my historical knowledge when it comes to the Ottoman Empire. Yeah. Recommend me some books.
It's not reading, mate.
Yeah, throw some books
on me. We'll do. Throw a mod. The recipe itself of Bekir's locum spread through the Near and Middle East, kind of what is like modern day Greece and the Balkans, and ladies in Constantinople started using little lace handkerchiefs to kind of pocket their locums as they were kind of wandering around the stalls. They would buy the locums from the sweet shops and they would be like, take them, put them in their little lace handkerchiefs, wrap them up, take them home.
What if they've been using that handkerchief earlier in the day?
Extra flavour, that lad.
Extra flavour, mate, yeah. Yeah. Marinade. Nah,
no. Marinade. No. Okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully they had separate handkerchiefs. I'm thinking they maybe had separate ones.
I'd say, you know, use the same.
Yeah. Reduce, reuse, recycle.
We've only got one planet.
Locum itself became like a love token between courting couples as well. So it was like a nice little
one for you. One for me.
One for me. End away, maybe.
Suck my cock.
And it quickly became the accompaniment of a strong cup of Turkish coffee.
Mm.
Sweet hit. But it isn't all sunshine and rainbows. We do have some doubters, as we said earlier. One of those being Mr. Tim Richardson, who was author of Sweets, History of Candy.
Sweets. A History of Candy.
History of Candle. Yeah, he's very skeptical about the truth of this legend of Bekir. So this guy fucking loves sweets, obviously, based on, you know, his whole career. His love affair with kind of confectionery was prompted by his grandfather's frequent missions to the Middle East as a buyer of Turkish delight.
Wow, going on a mission to buy it.
Mission.
Wow.
Yeah,
and I mean, going to the Middle East on holiday now, you know, is a bit far for some people, but back then, you know,
I know.
Going all that way for Turkish delight.
Yeah.
Keen bean.
Massive handkerchief.
Bring all back. The laciest.
Fun fact about Tim's dad, though. So, obviously, his grandfather was a Turkish delight buyer. His dad was a dentist.
Oh, I mean, dear.
He's create the problem and then create the fix. Am I right?
Exactly. You're driving the market demand.
Smashed it.
Clever. Clever family.
Really clever. But yeah, I mean, Tim Richardson himself believes that Bekir's story kind of lives on, fueled partly because of like romantic appeal. You know, it's nice to have like a figure that you can kind of pinpoint as like this person created this dish, but also partly due to commercial interests kind of continue to promote. You know, like I said, there's still a store. They're still on the tours when you go on like a food tour of Istanbul. There's like interest from these people to carry it on.
It's quite a unique thing though, isn't it? The reason why I maybe was originally drawn to it when I didn't know what it was the fact that its appearance is quite different to anything else that you have that's kind of sweet.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you pick it up and its texture is different. Then you actually eat it and the flavors then rose and you're kind of like, whoa. Mm. I feel like from start to finish, the whole thing's quite different to a lot of other sweets and candies from other cultures. And it's still, to this day, kind of unique.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tim himself had this to say on the origins of Turkish delight.
I'm sure it is a much older sweet. There is evidence of gummy, syrupy sweets dating back to the 9th century. Whoa. So Tim thinks it goes back even further.
Even further, yeah. I mean, I did manage to find a reference to the gummy, syrupy sweets that he's talking about because the Persians had developed a sweet called the Nowruz.
Okay, Nowruz.
Essentially translates to New Year. And it was made from sugar, starch, cut into chunks, but it was displayed on necklaces, which is wild. Very sticky neck.
I was going to say.
What, just so it's ready to eat whenever they want it? Or
I think so, yeah.
Purely maybe, or jewelry.
I think it was eaten during special celebrations, so I'm assuming and they'd have like a necklace of it for the celebration, you know, as they're like
dancing away, they just nibble
gridding over the dance floor. They're just like
gridding over the dance floor.
Right. Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, it was called New Year's, wasn't it? So just having a fucking New Year's party with their little gooey necklaces.
Be all sweaty and sticky.
Yeah, it would be.
Maybe that's just what it's all about. Just getting hot and sweaty, you know, in the club.
Hot, sweaty and sticky in the club.
In the club.
The club.
In the Persian club. Was it Persian? It was Persian, wasn't it?
Persian. Yeah, Persian. Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
You also get the Ottoman's neighbours, obviously the Greeks, claiming that they were the first ones to come up with locum as well.
Greeks are getting involved, aren't they?
Greek delight, is
it? Greeks getting involved, exactly. You will find Cypriot grocers in London that will sell you Greek delight.
Oh, you're joking. Okay.
Is there much of a difference between the two?
No, not really. Pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
No, just made by a Greek lad. No.
Right, that's it. Same. Yeah,
it's interesting. But I think this whole kind of region, there's a lot of
crossover.
Not arguments, but there's a lot of crossover. Like, we'll have a separate episode on it, but like the invention of baklava as well, you know, like the layered kind of phyllo pastry. it's really contested, like the origins of that between the Greeks, the Armenians, and the Turks. And you've also got like halva as well, which is super similar to baklava. That was originated in India. So you've got like a real kind of, I think because of the empire and because of like the whole, that whole region just mixing together, you've got a real complex view on like origins of food.
Yeah. Because they're all crossing paths, aren't they? Like, they're, you know, they're meeting halfway and they're kind of trading and things are kind of starting to get a bit blurred. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But one of the earliest references to Turkish delight that I managed to come across comes from a book written in the late 1700s by one Lady Mary Wortley Montagu, which probably one of the most English names I've ever heard. She was an English aristocrat who lived in Istanbul for several years.
Wow.
And in her book, she describes the sweet treat as
a delicacy the finest I ever tasted in my life.
Jesus, she is high pitch.
Very high pitched. Lady Montagu, thanks for joining us. Wow.
She loves it. The delicacy, the finest I've tasted in my life. So, she's over there. She's in Constantinople, schmocking the shisha, eating the creamy, creamy, chewy goodness.
She's got a fucking sick skin fade. She's fucking ready to go. She's had her ears set on fire and all sorts.
Yeah, she's had the whole Turkish experience.
Yeah, she has.
Loves it.
She has. But yeah, I mean, if you actually think about it, right? So 1700s, late 1700s, right? So England at this time doesn't really have that. Obviously, we've got like sweets and I think maybe chocolate has maybe just started to come over from the New World.
Yep.
But really, we've not got much in terms of like that it is on a level with Turkish delight. So imagine coming across this like massive kind of gooey cube that just super vibrant, looks fucking great, tastes well different to anything that you've ever had before.
Yeah.
It's going to blow your mind, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, she says it's a delicacy, and it literally is a delicacy, isn't it? It comes from this far away, mysterious land.
Used the right word.
She has. I also found a really great reference to, again, Turkish delight, that comes from the Sketches of Turkey in 1831 and 1832, which was almost like a piece of travel literature written by an American by the name of James Ellsworth Dickey. So 1831. And this is what he had to say.
We were also favoured with morsels of confectionery in which it is supposed the Turks are unrivalled, but with a single exception, the great family of candies, including the species rock lemon and whorehound, with the minor varieties of plum, comfit, are nowise different, but if anything, rather inferior to our own. The exception to which we allude is a delicious pasty mass, which melts away in the mouth and leaves a fragrant flavour behind. It is, as we are informed, made by mixing honey with the insipisated juice of the fresh grape. And the Turks, who esteem it highly, call it rahat lukum, or repose to the throat. A picturesque name to which it seems fairly entitled.
Firstly, he's like, they've got decent candy, but not quite as good as ours.
Yeah.
But the one that is better than ours is
Turkish delight.
Which is interesting. The way that it's made is, the way that he said he's told it's made is not sure 100% correct. Sounds like he was just told, not right there. But,
informed, made mixing with honey and the juice of fresh grape. So yeah, he's had a kind of like strange type of it, hasn't he?
Maybe
he's
not had your normal variation.
Yeah,
maybe.
Looks
yeah.
like it.
Maybe. Yeah.
He's a fan though. He likes it.
Big fan. Mm. Big fan is James. But yeah, I mean, Turkish delight became like a staple of the Middle Eastern cuisine, and it kind of quickly spread to other parts of the world, particularly popular in the Balkans, obviously because Ottomans were cutting around there in those days, and also in Greece as well, which we've covered. But I mean, yeah, the spread of Turkish delight was largely due to the Ottoman Empire, their expansion, kind of their whole influence in the region. In the early 1900s, so a bit further now, early 1900s, Turkish delight was introduced to the United Kingdom by a company called Fry's.
Ooh, we know this name.
So J.S. Fry's and Son was a Bristol-based chocolate company established by Dr. Joseph Fry around 1748.
You're right there.
Very old.
Turkish delight. I've heard it's good.
It's a pretty good Bristolian accent, that.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Hello, my lover.
Hello, my lover. Turkish squidgy delight.
Turkish squidgy delight. Come on. Give us a cube.
Give us a cue.
So yeah, he established it in 1748, but he didn't come about this venture in like a conventional manner. The business first started out as a apothecary, prescribing chocolate for medicinal purposes. Mm-hmm. And kind of this kind of growing demand made Fry realize there's potential. There's potential in this chocolate game. Let's get that fucking factory opened. Fucking pumping out.
I bet those were his exact words, mate.
Yeah. But yeah, his factory, based in the heart of Bristol, stood there for 150 years. And it kind of permeated the city with the smell of warm, melting chocolate. And its working conditions, so at the factory, the working conditions were deemed to be outstanding, which was, as you can imagine, a fucking rarity, you know, during the time of the First World War sort of thing.
Well, so it was good to work for Fry's.
Good to work for Fry's. Fry's Turkish Delight.
That's the time.
So it was one of their most successful products. It beat out their kind of second most popular product, which was chocolate cream. Have you ever had chocolate cream?
Is that the one with the white stuff in the middle?
Yeah.
The walnut whip?
No.
That's a walnut whip, Dominic.
No. He'd have said walnut whip.
I'd have said walnut.
No, it's like semi-dark chocolate, isn't it? With like little pockets
of whip.
White, creamy whip.
It's like minty, creamy.
Mint. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a big after eight.
Oh, no.
It's like you having a bar of chocolate with like little bits of toothpaste in it.
That's exactly what it is.
We don't need that. Come on now.
Yeah, they used to love it, mate. They loved it.
Got it all wrong.
Who's buying them? Somewhere. Grandmas.
Grandmas, granddads all around the country.
Yeah. It's the old people. Keep it going for them. Might as well now. They're almost dead.
Wow.
Jesus Christ.
Give him the shit, Chuck.
Get that unedited right out.
Do you know what I mean? Not taking it from him now.
Yeah.
I'll fucking bury it with him.
I'll take it with you. I don't want it. Horrible.
But yeah, Fry's Turkish Delight, one of their most popular products. It was launched in 1914, so perfect time for the war, under the slogan Full Eastern Promise. It's a pretty wild slogan, I think.
What was it?
Eastern Promise.
Full of Eastern Promise.
Yeah, you know, the East used to be the land of riches. You know, it's a delight. It's full of promise.
Is it? Well, yeah. No, you're right. It's enticing. But maybe this is like, again, me just like thinking too deeply into it. But I feel like a bit of cultural appropriation.
A bit of fetishization.
A bit of fetishization.
Yeah, good one, man. It's hard to say. Go on.
Because I guess, first and foremost, right, you've got Turkish is the main word. We're not the ones we kind of are the ones saying it's Turkish Delight, isn't it?
Mm.
I
think you might be deep in it a bit too much.
Maybe I am. But they don't call it Turkish Delight.
Maybe you are.
Well, yeah, but
they might have English stuff, mightn't they? Like English.
Yeah.
Something.
English shite.
Yeah.
Breakfast.
So I'm just going to show you guys a little picture, an old school advert of Fry's, just so you can fuel the fire with that kind of cultural.
Oh, God.
I'll just send it to you, actually, in the chat, shall I? I think it kind of coincides quite nicely with your whole, like, cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
Go on, say the word.
Fetishization.
Fettuccine.
I mean, it might not be, but I think it's treading a fine line, isn't it? You mean?
Yeah, I think, yeah. It's
grey area here with Turkish Delight.
Yeah, why the hell does it say milk Turkish Delight? Do you think that means milk chocolate, I'm guessing?
I think milk chocolate. Yeah, it's pretty wild though, and the little silly hat she's got on, but it's like a white lady wearing it.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, here we go. Oh, yeah, that's really cultural appropriation. He's wearing a turban.
Yeah, the second one's not great.
For those that can't see this, it's an illustration of like a round-faced Turkish man wearing a turban, twisting a long moustache with Fry's Turkish Delight out of his head, and then a slogan at the bottom that says, Fry's Feast from the Fabulous East.
Yeah, no, I wasn't defending it earlier before I'd seen any of this, just for the record.
Turkish hat on as well.
Well, you know, we've come a long way as a society.
Yeah.
All you can hope is that we're moving in the right direction, you know?
Well, exactly. I mean, would it do us any harm to change the name from Turkish Delight to the Turkish version of it?
I think Fry's would be pretty upset about that.
Kind of cool move. No one's going to eat a lakum, are they?
Well, yeah, no. There's work to be done in the marketing department to make that switch. Don't get me wrong, but be a kind of cool move.
Maybe.
Tweet
them. Think about it, Fry's. Think about it. Racist fucks.
Rancid little beasts.
I eat these Turkish delights once a week. No more. No more.
Are we at the point where we can eat it? Yeah. It's like my dinner time.
Yeah, I think so. Let's eat it, shall we? So for anyone's not had a Fry's Turkish delight, essentially like a chocolate bar. Delightful little treat, really. Little tiny morsel. And I didn't realise that the branding is still so old school, isn't it?
It's so old school. It's not been updated at all.
It does say milk chocolate still as well.
Does, and you can barely read some of the shit because of the color contrast, like the top bit where it's like heavenly Turkish delight wrapped in delicious milk chocolate.
They've not picked the best colors.
No. Oh, yeah, they haven't. Yeah, it's like you really can't see the word delicious.
No.
My bar is slightly damaged.
Yeah, for anyone who's not had this, it is essentially a rose flavored Turkish delight covered in like a thin layer of, not slab of milk chocolate, is it?
No, but the whole thing's like a slab. I mean, it's even the shape of it's not even traditional. You know, the traditional Turkish delight's cut into cubes. This ain't a cube, this is just an English version. Dom's gone right in.
No, I've had a bit.
Oh, yeah. Come on, come to daddy.
Stuck on my teeth.
I'm back home in the sweet, sweet hills of Turkey.
I don't remember it being that like, perfumey. Perfumey, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a hand soap, in a way.
And yet you go back in for it every time.
Yeah. Clean mouth.
Yeah.
Clean mouth. You don't brush your teeth. You just have one of these at night. In the morning.
Yeah. You know, if you had a couple of pints on the way back from work and you don't want the missus to know, just grab a Fry's and you set it on you.
There you go.
Sounds like you've done that. You're speaking for experience there.
Yeah, it's a niche tactic, but give it a go, honestly. Do you think you've just been to a grandma's house, which might score you more wholesome brownie points?
Gonna be honest, I can't see myself rushing out to buy another one anytime soon. But it's nice enough. But
yeah, I mean, it's all right. Like, very perfumey, more perfumey than I remember. The chocolate is good. I feel like if the chocolate wasn't there and it was just like a raw bar of Turkish delight, I don't think
then we'd be in trouble.
Yeah, this one needs the chocolate to carry it, doesn't it?
I think so.
Whereas good Turkish delight carries itself, doesn't it? It doesn't have the chocolate on there. It's just got the powdered sugar and it does its own thing.
Yeah. My nan used to send me one of these and a £5 note every month. That was like my spending.
Wow. One of these and a £5 note.
Yeah, yeah.
If my nan had sent me that, I'd have spent the £5 on more of these. My family always take the piss out of me because once I got given £10 for pocket money, is the most I'd ever been given in one go.
Mm.
Went out to a corner shop and bought 10 packets at £1 each of Crazy Bones.
Wow.
I just spunked the tenner straight away.
I love that, man. Big, big power move.
Little plastic pieces. First time I'd ever had money of my own.
Wow.
Yeah, but I bet they're still around now, you know?
Oh, yeah, I've still got them.
Yeah, they'll be in landfill somewhere.
Indonesia or something. Out of sight, out of mind, am I right?
Yeah, that's how it works, mate.
I enjoyed that. Yeah, that was good.
I think we can call it a success, our first eating segment.
I mean, there's a reason why they're still around, you know. We've just said the branding's not been updated since it came out, but they must be selling units to still manufacture them. I mean, when I went into Tesco today to grab this one, the box on the shelf was like almost gone. Whether that's the same box that's been there since 1989.
Because it's your local and you just constantly rinse it.
It was a fresh box at the start of the week until I showed up.
Oh, who'd have thought? It's nearly empty.
Yeah, someone's buying them, not just me.
Someone's buying them. So, yeah, I mean, Fry's, the company itself, merged with Cadbury's in 1990, but they retained the actual Fry's branding, as we've just demonstrated, which is interesting because Well, no, it's interesting because like most companies that Cadbury buys will slap Cadbury's on the front of it and redo the branding. Whereas Fry's, they just kept the same.
Kept it. You wouldn't know it's Cadbury's unless you looked quite hard. No. You'd have to look at the back.
The only way you'd know is looking at the back and you'd see that royal stamp where it says by appointment to H, the Queen, to Coca and chocolate manufacturers, Cadbury UK Limited, Bourneville.
Well, it shouldn't be Queen anymore.
Well, there you go. They've already been sat out over a year then, haven't they?
Exactly.
God, I miss her.
Fuck, I miss her.
Well, yeah. Today, Fry's Turkish Delight is described by Cadbury's as a mystical, exotic treat that lets you escape from everyday life.
Well,
yeah, no, yeah, done that for us for the last 5 minutes since we ate it.
At times of kind of popular demand, it's estimated that Fry's sell around 1 million of these bars a week.
Bloody hell.
Not messing.
Interesting.
Big
numbers.
Messing,
not messing.
There's only, 68 million people in the UK. That means like one in 68 people are scranning one of them. You go into two classrooms of children and you've...
One person.
Somebody in there scranning one.
Yeah. Surely the Fry's Turkish Delight is an absolute abomination to Turks.
I would say it's not authentic. Yeah. I'm not sure they'd call it an abomination. That's maybe like...
yeah. I think overestimating how much they'd care about that. Yeah, probably just be like, what is this? Like, nah, maybe not.
Yeah, but it's not kosher.
No.
It is halal though. I was Googling about the profit margins and the most Googled question about it is it halal? And apparently it is.
Halal?
So, yeah, halal. Love that.
Interesting. Inclusive. There you go.
Well, inclusive. The Ottomans, as you said before, were inclusive and they're carrying it on through the Fry's bar.
I mean, yeah, we've covered like the history. We've covered obviously the taste and things like that. I thought I would also do a bit of research into like Turkish delight in popular culture. Because it is featured in a few popular, famous books and films.
First one that springs to mind for me is Mr. Tumnus and Narnia.
Yeah, I was going to say Narnia.
Mm.
That's the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Now that looks like some high grade when she whips that out on a little sleigh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, if I'm picturing a sweet treat in my mind, I'm picturing it in that little silver platter. She lifts the lid on. And I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
She could freeze me any day. Give me that sweet treat first, you know.
She's flown over straight from the streets of Constantinople to deliver whatever his name is. A little dickhead.
Edmund is his name.
Edmund the Rat is what he's known as. The Judas of the story.
Yeah, well, the Turkish delight is so good that he completely rat out his entire family?
He betrays his entire family.
And he betrays Mr. Tumnus, the little fawn or whatever he is.
Yeah.
He sells out his entire family.
Just for a sweet treat. Like, this was anything but a delight for his family.
C.S. Lewis, the author of obviously the Chronicles of Narnia, included Turkish delight within The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Not a trivial detail. It was symbolically loaded, the reason why he picked it.
Wasn't he writing these, like, in this sort of interwar period, just after Fry's had launched theirs, maybe?
I think so.
Maybe, I think not 100%.
He went on a trip to Turkey in around 1922. It's after the First World War, so things have chilled out a little bit. I'll come on to that bit in a second. But yeah, essentially, the candy, or Turkish delight, plays a pivotal role in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And like you said, guys, the White Witch uses it to manipulate Edmund, what's his name, Pevensey, some shit like that.
Oh, yeah, something like that.
Some daft name like that. But yeah, like the Turkish delight kind of represents like the seductive powers of evil. It symbolizes temptation, deceit. And yeah, kid sells out his whole family. That's how powerful it is.
Yeah.
He's just completely rats them all out.
Yeah, it's such a bastard.
He's lucky they didn't all die. Horrendous deaths.
Exactly. Yeah. there was death on the cards for a little while there, Edmund.
Yeah.
But yeah, essentially how it goes is Tilda Swinton, aka the White Witch, offers Edmund like an enchanted box of Turkish delight in exchange for his loyalty, which then leads him astray from his duties as a loyal brother and a member of the Narnian community.
Oh, nice word.
Obviously, many people are, like ourselves, are very confused as to why Edmund would sell out his family for Turkish delight.
Yes.
The film doesn't really do a good job of explaining it, but in the book, it's actually explained that the witch's food is enchanted, or she's enchanted the Turkish delight.
Magic.
So it's a little bit deeper. And this is how it's described in the book.
Enchanted Turkish delight, and that anyone who had once tasted it would want more and more of it, and would even, if they were allowed, go on eating it until they killed themselves.
Fucking hell, that bit heavy. Wow.
Potent.
Well, it's, isn't it, gluttony, one of the deadly sins? Try that one for size.
What's that got to do with anything?
I was just going,
because you eat like really good, then you eat it until you die. You know, it's deadly, mate. That's the definition of deadly.
Yeah, it's so nice that you'll keep eating it if you can until you die.
Yeah. Yeah, C.S. Lewis, famed for his Christianity.
What? Why are we in Christianity now? When I was looking at a bit of research for this episode, and just because I was thinking, was it Turkish delight that Edmund was eating? I knew it was some kind of sweet treat, and I thought it might be. So I had a Google, and I found an interesting quote that I thought would be...
What the hell kind of cowboy behavior is this? You can't bring your own quote.
Yeah, I know.
You fucking write the next episode, Miles, if you want me.
Back it, I'll do it all.
This would be way better than anything Andy had given me, so I just put it in my back pocket.
It's just here's a maybe, it's here's a maybe.
Okay, well, let's maybe hear it then.
Some article online that was talking about Edmund eating the Turkish delight. Mm-hmm. It says the outbreak of World War II and its subsequent rationing meant that Turkish delight was harder than ever to come by. Mm. Perhaps this is why it became so significant to C.S. Lewis. As he welcomed refugee children into his Oxford neighbourhood in real life, he thought back on the sweet candies and holidays that had marked his own childhood. It makes sense that Turkish delight would have been on Lewis's brain as he crafted a book where Christmas features as a main theme. And then it says, in Narnia, in brackets, it's always winter and never Christmas. It says a product of the White Witch's evil magic. It makes sense to draw a parallel between this dismal fantasy and the stark realities of wartime. Rationing extended to timber, which made Christmas trees harder to come by, and confectionery rationing didn't end until February of 1953, still well before the end of sugar rationing later that year. When the White Witch asks Edmund what he'd like best to eat, it's entirely possible that Lewis was answering for him the candy that would be most difficult and expensive to obtain. Edmund isn't just asking the witch for Turkish delight, he's essentially asking her for Christmas too.
That's the longest quote we've ever had. But it was bang on the money. Bang on the money. Can we just cite that? Because he basically used their entire article and they don't want us to get sued.
Essentially taking up the next like two paragraphs of what I've wrote down.
Oh, well done.
Well, you carry it.
No, all on the money.
Yeah, it was all on the money. We'll just go with it. One person that maybe doesn't want to go with it and it is a bit frustrated by C.S. Lewis's feature of the sweet in his book is Jenny Colgan.
Colgan.
Author of Welcome to Rosie's Sweet Shop of Dreams.
Never heard of it.
Well,
can't imagine you have, Dom. You don't really read much, do you?
Oh, now. Come on now.
This is what Jenny had to say about Turkish delight.
Turkish delight has had a bad reputation since that man, C.S. Lewis, a positive genius in other ways, linked it forever with one of the most terrifying creations in literature, the White Witch of Narnia, and that naughty, sticky, traitorous Edmund. However, with the sensuous pleasure imbued in its melting, gelatinous texture, and when made in the proper way, perfumed with rose petals, flavoured with oils, and dusted with sugar, it reclaims its power as a sweet, seductive, it claims... its power as a sweet, as seductive as Arabian... What is that actually saying? Flavoured with oils and dusted with sugar, it reclaims its power as a sweet, as seductive as Arabian Nights.
Wow. Jenny Colgan's a silly woman.
Jenny sounds like she's... Oh, yeah, God. She's just a bit...
She's not right.
A bit beg, in my she's opinion. Right. I mean, do you know anybody who was there like, oh, bloody Turkish delight, it's a villain's treat or anything? She's just deep in it too much. Like, nobody...
Yeah, she's just... Yeah.
Nobody was there being like... Everybody just hates Edmund for being Edmund. It's got nothing to do with it.
Well, we're not blaming the Turkish delight in the situation. Yeah.
You know, it could have been anything.
Her description of Edmund is very good, though. A naughty, sticky, traitorous Edmund.
Yeah, that is bang on the money. I'll give her that.
Some good work. So Lewis's kind of like fascination with reading, history and culture might have influenced his decision to include like an Eastern element in Narnia as well. So the name of Narnia's hero, Aslan, is a Turkish word for lion.
I was going to say.
Hinting at like a subtle Eastern influence there.
Yeah.
And like for the children, obviously Turkey and its delights would have been exotic and alluring as the magical land of Narnia itself. So it's kind of aligns quite well.
Yeah. Mr. Tumnus looks like a street merchant.
I was worried where you were going there for a second. I mean, it's not great. It's not
We'll roll with it. But, What's he selling?
Hooves.
I can't. Turkish delight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. He's bottled it at the final.
He really bottled it.
I can't cultural appropriate anymore.
No, I'd have gone with like cloth.
Yeah,
I'd have
cloth.
Rugs.
Yeah.
Silk merchant.
Rubies. Yeah.
Rubies.
Okay, let's just move on. You're just going to get yourself in trouble here. Come on.
Obviously, as I said before, Lewis went on a trip to Turkey, kind of in the early 1900s, where he saw the Sultan's elite guards, who are also called Aslan because of their bravery and loyalty. So they were called lions.
Love that.
The name of the White Witch is Jadis, which is a French word meaning of old. And in the book, Aslan explains that the witch practices a very old, deep magic, but his magic is even older, from the dawn of time.
Wow.
Well, interesting little tidbits.
So all these influences of his travels are kind of making their way into the book.
Making their way. Yeah, exactly.
Man of the world. That's what they call him.
In the broader context of the novel, Turkish Delight. Who calls
is
him
it?
That? Who the fuck calls him that?
Me. Just me. Just me.
In the broader context of the novel, Turkish Delight serves as like a humanizing purpose, or it serves as a humanizing purpose. Edmund, initially kind of portrayed as like a dishonest and mean-spirited character, becomes kind of more three-dimensional when viewed through kind of the lens of his circumstances, like when he's being kind of pushed into it.
Nah, he's still a little bottom bitch.
Baby back bitch coming around my house.
Bitch.
Oh, all my homies hate Edmund.
But yeah, I mean, Delight itself, it represents like a connection to happier times, as you said kind of earlier, Miles, stole my bit. Like a longing for like unity and peace of his family before kind of the world, you know, the world conflict. It's deeply symbolic, his kind of use of Turkish Delight. He didn't just kind of pick it because it was his favourite and he wanted to include it. It was like a deeply symbolic choice, and it was a well-considered choice by C.S. Lewis. It added kind of real like layers of meaning and depth to the narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't just kind of like a finger in the air.
Because on the surface, it seems like a random choice, doesn't it? Like Turkish Delight isn't part of the Narnia world. It's not mentioned like in the story before that point.
Yeah, no, you're right. Fun fact about Turkish Delight and its appearance in the Chronicles of Narnia, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Tesco reported a 200% increase in sales during the movie's release at the cinema.
Yeah, so take that one, Jenny, and shove that one up your arse. Like it's not villainized. It's literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sold more because of it. So back off, Jenny, all right?
Back off, Jenny.
Back in your fucking sweet shop. Yeah. Go and suck on a humbug.
Yeah. Well, her first sentence is, Turkish Delight has had a bad reputation since that man, C.S. Lewis.
I just think that she's projecting her own feelings. You need to hate Edmund, not the Turkish Delight.
Redirect the hatred to the correct place. Yeah. Edmund's throat.
Yeah.
Sticky Edmund.
Sticky Edmund is what he's made to call
him. Traitorous Edmund.
Yeah, horrible guy.
I mean, but he stays in the films, doesn't he? He's in all of them after that, and he's like forgiven. But I've never forgiven him.
Nah, never forgive him. I'm 30 now, and I still will never forgive him.
Yeah, never forgive, never forget.
To be fair, I don't think Hollywood's forgiven him either. Because have you ever seen the kid that played him in the movies in anything else? No.
He acted so well that everyone genuinely hates the guy who acted it.
Mm. It's like what's he called, the blonde kid in Game of Thrones?
Joffrey.
Yeah, actor was so good at playing an evil guy that everyone kind of just naturally hates the actor as well.
Suffering from success.
I'd be worried about Edmund, because he comes back and he kind of saves the day and everyone's forgiven him. And there's like more movies after that where Edmund playing like a pivotal role is back on the good team.
He's shown that he's a rat, hasn't he? Never forget.
The second there's a whiff of Rose, he's off.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sweet treat comes on the cards. He's away, isn't he?
We hate to see it.
But yeah, interesting little tidbit.
I didn't think this podcast would take us to The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. I'm not going to lie.
I didn't.
Oh, I always knew we were going there. Like, as soon as I knew that it was Turkish Delight, I was like, yeah, I can't wait to let everybody know just how much I hate that little boy you're at.
We should create a new spin-off podcast where we just hate on Edmund. Just come to spin-off.
Today I want to talk about his hairstyle. And it's stupid.
Little hour about his hair.
Little hairstyle.
Yeah. Come
on, 45 minutes deep dive. Don't even think he uses any gel or anything, does he?
Yeah.
But yeah, wrapping things up. So over time, Turkish Delight gained popularity in kind of other parts of Europe and North America. It quickly became like a well-known sweet treat around the world. You know, it's not uncommon to find Turkish Delight in specialty shops, online stores, supermarkets, airports. Wherever you go, really, you can find a Turkish Delight knocking around, which is pretty cool.
It's always kinda in airports, like, isn't it? Duty free.
Always. And they're always shit as well, those lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's an easy flog, isn't it? Because it's kind of like an international food. So put it
exotic,
in an airport. It looks like you've got it from your travels, you know, bottom of the barrel stuff.
Cop out. I'd rather a Toblerone.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Its unique taste and texture continue to captivate people of all ages and cultures. Yeah, and it's become like a beloved kind of confectionery that's really stood the test of time. So many different flavors now. It's still kind of made the same way, but you can get flavors, obviously the rosewater stuff. You can get orange blossom flavor, which is interesting.
Okay.
You can get it filled with like pistachios, hazelnuts, almonds, apricots, figs, dates. Flavors wise, you've obviously got like lemon, pistachio, chocolate. Interesting ones, like actual chocolate flavored Turkish lights, like the cube itself.
I feel like it needs, I don't know about that.
Don't know about that. Well, no. It's just a fry, isn't it? But all contained. You've not got like a coating.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's the texture change, isn't it? You're not really in it for the chocolatey flavour.
You're right. You are right. Maybe.
Oh.
You are right, but you've not tried it, so give it a chance.
Okay, well, true. Next week you can bring us chocolate Turkish delight. Okay. Look forward to it.
I also managed to find a few flavours. Coffee flavoured Turkish delight, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think that'll be all right. I think so.
Yeah, but you're having it with the coffee.
That's true.
Mint flavoured.
That could work. What is that, a clear
chocolate
one?
Cream territory, isn't it?
Yeah, chocolate cream territory for me. Suit Milo because he uses it for brushing his teeth, doesn't he? So.
Yeah, he does. Perfect for me, yeah.
Perfect. And the last one, chili pepper.
No. Oh. No.
No.
Right, let's just end it right there. You're getting silly with it now. Come on.
That's a flavour that's going to linger a lot, isn't it? It's going to hang around that.
Spicy jelly, basically.
Spicy jelly.
Spicy jelly.
What on earth? Surely not.
Literally. I feel like if I had chocolate around it, you've kind of got the chili chocolate thing happening. But then just chili.
You're trying to sell this, Mel, so no one's buying.
Chili Turkish delight.
Chili Turkish delight. Yeah, and on that rather spicy note, I think we'll end it there, shall we?
Turkish delight. Edmund's betrayal.
Edmund's betrayal.
Spicy jelly.
That's the name of the episode.
Edmund's betrayal.
Turkish delight. Edmund's betrayal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Works a treat. Yeah. Nailed that one down.
God. Turkish delight. There you go. All the way from ancient Persia to the Ottoman Empire to coming over to the West and Bristol. Making its way all the way to Ratty Edmund.
Ratty little Edmund.
Yeah. That was really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Turkish delight. Something that I enjoy. We have discovered that. It's a guilty pleasure of mine, but knew nothing about its origin other than the obvious fact that it's from Turkey.
Well,
I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. That was a really fun one. Hope you're enjoying the podcast. If you want to reach out and suggest a dish or say hello, you can email us at whatthefoodpodcast@gmail.com. Say hello over there. Feel free to follow us on socials as well. We've got Instagram and we should have, by the time this is live, a TikTok as well, potentially. So yeah, make sure you're following us on TikTok if that's live. And then the last thing is just to give us a rating if you can. If you can give us a rating wherever you listen to the podcast, on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever else, that would be much appreciated. I think, unless you guys have got anything else, that's it.
You've covered it.
Beautiful. Yeah, no, just fuck Edmund and see you next week.
Fuck Edmund and see you on the next one. Right.
Ciao for now.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.